Well, the pastor's out of town, so you get the ex-con again.
It's around 1995. Redeemer Presbyterian Church is a new PCA church in Austin, Texas. Jerry Phelps stands in front of about two dozen Christian volunteers.
So those of you who've already heard about my lurid past, you can tune out for a little bit.
Most of the volunteers are in their 20s. They're just starting their own careers. None have ever been homeless or on welfare. They want to help the poor, but they're not quite sure how. So they call in Jerry Phelps.
But I'm an ex-con, an ex-agnostic, an ex-left-wing activist, and an ex-university teacher. And you have to decide which of those is worse.
This podcast is about effective compassion. We draw from the Bible, from interviews in the field, and from history, specifically the history of Christian poverty fighting. This series is about the hard task of restoring hope. This episode is about one church's efforts to practice 19th century compassion in today's world.
Effective compassion is made possible by listeners like you. Additional support comes from World Help, a Christian humanitarian organization working to deliver food and Bibles to starving, persecuted Christians in North Korea, the most dangerous nation for Christians. A gift of $20 sends a Bible and a week's worth of food to a North Korean brother or sister. More at worldhelp.net/podcast.
Jerry Phelps looks a lot like, well, Mrs. Claus. Curly white hair, rosy cheeks. But behind that soft exterior is a steely core.
I was teaching economics at the University of Houston when I was arrested and sent to prison. I was arrested for armed robbery. I'm guilty of that. The robbery was to get money for an anti-war newspaper. This was in 1969 in the Vietnam War, and I couldn't raise the money. So I thought of this dumb armed robbery, and I never said I was smart, okay?
Phelps was sentenced to 35 years in prison.
And after a couple of years, I started saying I was glad I went to prison, and I meant it. And the reason was that I went into prison an agnostic, but I came out a Christian. And if I never got out of prison, that was worth it.
After just 7.5 years behind bars, Texas granted Phelps parole for good behavior. The lawyer that fought vigorously for her initial conviction was a Christian, and when he heard of her dramatic conversion, he petitioned the state for a complete pardon. The governor did so on July 29, 1979. She moved to Austin, Texas to be close to her family. There, she got in touch with Marvin Olasky.
At some point along the way, she had read the book I wrote on poverty fighting, The Tragedy of American Compassion.
They started talking about Christian charity.
We had both been on the left during the late 60s and the early 70s. We both wanted to help the poor, and we both saw that the way the left tried to help was wrong. So we had a lot of good conversations.
They agreed that modern-day Christians can learn a lot from those who waged a successful war on poverty in the 19th century. But Phelps also had some questions. Could similar programs still work, or had things changed too much over the past 100 years? She wondered if helpers had become too soft to offer real challenge, and she worried that recipients had lost their work ethic and had become used to receiving handouts. So Phelps set up a little nonprofit to test out the ideas. One of the test churches was Redeemer Presbyterian. Olasky was an elder there. Phelps came in to help train church volunteers in practical compassion.
She had epinosis. A lot of street-level knowledge of how things actually worked. And I had the history, and so we combined to try to explain to our church members what things worked historically and what things didn't. And she had that personal experience that was hugely valuable.
The program was called New Start. Its goal was to help people in the Austin area get back on their feet. One night a week, participants would come to the church for a meal and Bible study. They'd meet with their volunteer mentors and attend trainings that covered budgeting, child development, nutrition, and parenting. But for the New Start program to work, volunteers needed to flex some underused muscles. Help needed to be challenging, personal, and spiritual. Phelps wasn't worried about the P or the S, but she wasn't sure the volunteers from Redeemer Pres could handle the C proper challenge. Phelps told the volunteers stories from prison. She talked about the time a young inmate stole from her. Phelps shrugged it off, figuring she had more money than the other inmate. So Phelps was surprised when a third inmate got angry. She lashed out at Phelps for teaching the thief that theft was okay. Phelps had many such encounters during her 7 years in prison. They led her to develop a philosophy of tough love, of having a tender heart and a tough mind. The church volunteers were clearly tender-hearted. They cared enough about the poor to want to help. But Phelps told them they'd need to become tough-minded enough to do it right. Otherwise, they were likely to make things worse. Phelps didn't want to operate the way modern government welfare programs did. Instead, she said that Christian volunteers would need to set high expectations and hold people accountable. The volunteers needed to learn how to say no. They also needed to understand the participants. Enter Ricardo Avila.
Probably within 6 months, maybe seven, we went from five, seven families to probably 20. And then by the end of the year, we had probably over 50 families we were serving.
Ricardo Avila became New Start's director in the late 1990s.
We had a lot of volunteers. We call them mentors, and we refer to the people we were helping. We call them partners.
Avila came from a poor family, and he understood participants in a way that Redeemer's educated, affluent membership couldn't. He also had a gut understanding that Marvin Olasky, with his historical knowledge, didn't.
And I think that in hindsight, I think that's what kind of Marvin meant when he said, we have the theory, but you have the practical application. And working with the poor, it's good to have the practical application.
Every participant was different. Their needs were different. The program had to be tailored for the individual. It couldn't be one size fits all like a government program. But running a personal program also requires wisdom and judgment. And that takes time and often mistakes to develop. Redeemer Prez was a wealthy church, and affluent people love others in an affluent way. Ricardo Avila tells the story of one early New Start Christmas party.
And so our first Christmas, my jaw dropped because some of the gifts that were given our partners were, expensive. They were expensive, very expensive. The partners were like, oh, wow. They gave me a fur coat, or the kids were like, wow, you gave me a brand new bike, and
Avila saw the discontent these extravagant gifts caused. He determined that in the future, they would set boundaries.
Because what we want to understand, we were trying to follow Marvin's guidelines of loving our neighbors, but in a responsible way.
As New Start developed, volunteers experienced many of the things Jerry Phelps had warned about in her training. Some people asked for money or made other personal demands. And volunteers did find it hard to say no. They also had to wrestle with disappointment, because while many participants were able to get back on their feet and leave the program, others kept boomeranging back. One of those was Barbara.
I remember meeting her at a picnic, and that's really where our relationship started. It was a church picnic.
This is Susan Olasky. She met Barbara around 1999.
Barbara was about 45 at that point, and she started drinking when she was, 10 or 12. She had a serious problem by the time she was 14.
Barbara had four children from three different men. She was still drinking when she first came to Redeemer Prez for help. She spent her first New Start meeting over a toilet, going through withdrawal before becoming sober. The church helped Barbara maintain her sobriety, and her connection with Redeemer Prez helped her regain custody of her children. She even moved in with one church family for a time. For 18 months, she submitted to the program's budget oversight. The church paid some of her bills and provided a security deposit and first month's rent on a duplex. And they put up funds for her to start her own cleaning business. Susan Olasky hired Barbara to clean her house.
She started cleaning, and at first she would just come for a couple of hours and clean. But she had two kids, I had kids. So we started talking more. So it really developed into a friendship with a cleaning component. So when she would have trouble, she would talk it through with me.
Through New Start, Barbara heard and accepted the gospel for the first time. She also learned how to discipline her children, how to budget. She took baby steps towards self-sufficiency.
By the time I met Barbara, she had been sober. She had gone through the New Start program. And she was at the point where she was trying to gain her independence. She was feeling like, well, I own a business. I don't need people bossing me around.
But running a business is hard, especially for a single mom who started drinking at age 12. When her kids were sick, Barbara couldn't work, and bills piled up. Barbara found herself bouncing from crisis to crisis. But when New Start offered advice, she bucked against it. For example, the church offered to subsidize an apartment for her. It would be closer to the houses she cleaned and save her $300 a month in rent. But Barbara didn't like the location, so she refused to move.
So they were sort of at this standstill. She couldn't make enough money cleaning to really support herself, and the church didn't want to give her any more financial assistance if she wouldn't follow any of their guidance.
She fell further behind on bills. Volunteers were tempted to give her money to help her out.
I don't remember if she actually said, "Can you give me money?" But it would be more that she would describe this plight, and I would feel like, huh, it really wouldn't be difficult for me to give her money to fix it. So she's telling me this, and I'm saying, oh, Barbara, you need to talk to the church. But if the church won't do it, then the Alaskis will.
But then she realized she'd just broken the cardinal rule, a rule her husband Marvin had written an entire book about.
So here I am, married to the guru of compassion, right? And we've had this training on tough love. We've learned that middle-class people are really often too soft.
So she called the church. The New Start director was sympathetic, but firm. Neither the church nor the Alaskis could give Barbara money unless she came in for budgeting advice. And Susan Alasky got an important reminder.
It's not my job to fix things. I am not Barbara's savior. And if the church is functioning as the church, I shouldn't be undermining the wisdom of the people who are helping her with her budget. My job was to befriend.
That was a tough lesson.
What it told me was, it's really hard. If you think a problem is only a financial problem and you have resources, it's really easy to sort of give the money. But if the problem is deeper and long-lasting, then the money isn't going to solve the problem and will probably make things worse.
At first, Barbara agreed to go along with New Start's budgeting oversight. But over the weekend, she changed her mind. Her mom gave her money, and she fell back into old habits. So after 18 months of intense help, Barbara was just barely making it. New Start volunteers and mentors grew discouraged. They'd invested so much and yet had seen so little positive change. But did that mean the approach was wrong? Was it the 19th century techniques that failed? Well, we'll come back to that question in a future episode. Because while New Start was experimenting on a small scale, the story was also playing out on a much bigger stage.
There must be a greater purpose to prosperity, and that is to make sure the American dream touches every willing heart. And that's why I will talk about unleashing faith-based institutions and charities that warm the cold of life, so that people understand the American dream is meant for them, and so that we can usher in the responsibility era as we head into the 21st century.
Effective Compassion is produced by World Radio. This episode was written by Anna Johansson, with production assistance from Susan Alasky. Our technical engineer is Rich Rosel. I'm the producer and host, Paul Butler.
Effective Compassion is made possible by listeners like you. Additional support comes from World Help, a Christian humanitarian organization serving the physical and spiritual needs of people in some of the world's most hard-to-reach places. Help for today, hope for tomorrow. Right now, World Help has a window of opportunity to deliver food and Bibles to starving, persecuted Christians in North Korea, the most dangerous nation for Christians. A gift of $20 sends a Bible and a week's worth of food to Christians living in this hostile country. More at worldhelp.net/podcast.